Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line William Federer, certainly one of my favorite guests. He's the author of a number of books we carry. We carry his book on America's God and Country, and his book on, and of course, the CD on America's God and Country, and on St. Patrick, and on St. Nicholas, and on George Washington Carver. And, of course, we going to be carrying his new book as well. What's the name of that book, Bill?
Oh, Dr. Stan, it's called Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be carrying that one, Backfired. You can remember that. And of course, it goes into the background of religious tolerance in America. But I really wanted to spend at least part of this evening talking about what happened with Terri Schiavo. Now, a lot of people want to put that behind us, and, well, too bad about Terri. And yet, of course, you have to understand that this was a very well-manipulated propaganda bit. And, of course, Terri was simply the victim of this whole scheme. How often, as they were in the process of killing Terri, did you see on your television pictures of the husband bending over his wife, who looked very pretty? She obviously she couldn't speak, but he looked over so attentively. But she looked so pretty there. And then you'd hear the lawyer coming on, who incidentally is pro-death. He's part of this whole pro-death movement, and in my estimation, somehow tied into this whole occultic movement working behind the scenes with an intensive hatred of humanity and human life. But the lawyer would say, oh, she's so peaceful. She's not having any pain. Of course, she was on a morphine drip. That's why she didn't have any pain. Why did they have a morphine drip if she wasn't having any pain? Unless it was an intentional effort to kill her. And that's what you do in hospices. You just give people morphine until they die. But, you know, the truth of the matter was, well, I'm going to let Bill tell you what he has heard from people who were there, who actually witnessed what happened. And the pictures you saw were taken many months, if not years, before to create an impression in your mind that dying death with dignity is such an easy thing. But that isn't really what it was all about, is it, Bill?
Well, no. And, Dr. Stan, I was with David Gibbs. He was the attorney for the Schindler family. And I spoke up in Washington, D.C. at a conference on confronting judicial activism. And it was carried by C-SPAN, as a matter of fact, just a month ago, and nationwide. But there I was with David Gibbs and Chief Justice Roy Moore at the dinner table just prior to David Gibbs speaking. And Judge Roy Moore was on my left, and David Gibbs was on the right. And we were talking about the Terri Schiavo case, and I asked David. I said, David, you know, what really went on? In the news, we didn't really hear the first-hand stories. And he said, well, what happened was that the husband would not let any cameras into her room. And so nobody knew how responsive that she was. And he said he was a little apprehensive the very first time. Several months before her death, the family asked him to be a counsel, to be a co-attorney, and then the other attorney dropped out, and so he became the head attorney. David Gibbs has got his Christian Law Association.
Hold that thought right there. Okay, pick up the story there, please.
And David said he was a little apprehensive when they first took him in to see her. He didn't know what he was going to see. He heard all the stories, Anyway, he walks in and sees her in bed with her eyes open and looking around the room, and he walks up to the side of the bed, and she turns and looks him in the eye, and there, and she says, when the dad came in, you know, she looked at him, but when the mom came in, she got excited and began to, you know, he used the words babble, you know, trying to communicate, and he said whenever the mother would leave the room, she would start crying, and he, you know, tried to explain, you know, to Terry, and he wasn't sure if she was really there and comprehending, and so he would move to the other side of the bed, and she would roll over and turn her head and look at him on the other side of the bed and look him right in the eye, and she would try to babble and communicate with him, and then he would go to the foot of the bed, and she would roll back again, and she would look at him and try to, and he said she was anything but brain dead and a vegetable, and I asked him, I said, well, where did those terms come from? He said, well, what happened was that after she had her incident, which he says they strongly suspect was domestic violence, that she was, the family and Michael were suing to get insurance money for her. And their attorney, fresh out of law school, very first case, the attorney suggested that if they used the term vegetative state, that would cause them to get more money from the insurance companies for her rehabilitation. And so based on that legal counsel, they went ahead and did it. But the parents never thought in their wildest dreams that the son-in-law would use that term in a later date to try to kill her.
But, of course, the thing is that there are other doctors who came in who gave the testimony she was permanent vegetative state, and they simply perjured themselves because a doctor knows what that term means, and that means that somebody is just totally unresponsive. They obviously brought in people to testify and to give sworn testimony who were part of this pro-death, pro-euthanasia, pro-so-called death with dignity movement, which is really nothing more than planned murder.
Yeah, I mean, one of the doctors they brought in spent like 5 minutes with her, didn't do any MRIs or any CAT scans or anything like that, and the doctors that are in the neurosurgeon field say that you never do that. When, you know, a typical analysis of somebody's brain, he says you do these set of tests. Well, the doctors at Michael Schiavo did not do any of those tests. Anyway,
hold that thought just a minute, Bill, because we're going to bring our other stations back on, and of course we want them to hear as much of the story as we can. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course William Federer is telling us about his conversation with Mr. Gibbs, who was the attorney who had been engaged by the family several months beforehand, describes going into the room with Terry when he first met her and walked up to the side of the bed. She looked at him. He tried to explain to her certain things. He didn't know whether she was really getting with it, so he walked around to the other side of the bed. She rolled over, looked at him, went to the foot of the bed. She looked down at the foot of the bed. She responded when her father came in. She responded when her mother came in, got very excited, and of course sort of babbled on, trying to communicate. Certainly nothing permanent vegetative state. Everybody who said that was simply lying, but then the whole thing was a lie to begin to get the American people to say, well, if the judges say it's all right, we've just got to let them be killed. Just like happened in Hitler's Germany, when they said, well, there's certain lives that are not worth living, and what was the first thing they did? Why, they get rid of the people who had severe disabilities, and then the people with psychiatric problems, and then the Jews, and then the Gypsies, and what you never have heard of is that there were 12 million others that they killed in the concentration camps. That is covered in a book called War for Genocide, by Professor Norman Cohn, a Jewish scholar who writes about the Holocaust and the 6 million Jews, but in the foreword of the book, he talks about the 12 million others. Why don't we ever talk about those? Because they were predominantly Christians. At that time, Germany was predominantly a Christian nation, but so we don't want to alarm the Christians in America. Oh, we wouldn't want to alarm them. So we just talk about the 6 million Jews, but never the 12 million others who died in the concentration camp. So pick up the story there, please, Bill.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, when I was talking to David, he went on to say that there were three theories of how she originally fell ill. One was that she had a heart attack. And he said that they don't think that was really what happened, because her blood tests and the way that doctors, and you know this better than I do, the way that you medically can tell if somebody had a heart attack, she did not have any of those test results. Besides, she never had any heart problems before or after. So they don't think that was it. The second theory, they said, well, it was bulimia. It was her not eating properly. And that was, and they, he said that the family knew that wasn't true because they made that story up. That was part of this lawyer's counsel to get money from the insurance companies for her rehabilitation. And, that, the suit was, they sued her gynecologist for not asking enough questions to find out if she had an eating problem. And that was what the $2 million settlement was over. Now, that was a big stretch, but juries nowadays give those type of awards.
Yeah, but it was all based upon deception, and tragically the family went along with it.
Yeah, yeah. And then the third thing he said...
But that attorney should be disbarred. For an attorney to bring in something that he knows is untrue just to get a large settlement. But then, I suppose when you have attorneys who don't believe in God, and courts who don't believe in God, and judges who don't believe in God, why not lie? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, they do that all the time now. And, anyway, the third thing is, was domestic violence. That was what they suspected. And he said there were several, testimonies of people who had experienced Michael Schiavo putting them in headlocks, like a brother-in-law, and that he would wrestle around like that. Anyway, he was a very controlling husband and would keep track of her mileage when she would drive around town, and because he didn't want her to visit the parents, and you know, would count the money and make sure that she you know, didn't spend. Very controlling, and she he was the only man that she ever kissed. I mean, she was very naive coming into this relationship with him. And after about 5 years of this controlling situation, she mentioned to a friend at work about 3 months prior that she was thinking of leaving him. And then shortly thereafter was when he called the brother, and he said, oh, she fell out of bed, and she's in a clump on the floor at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then he calls the father and tells him, and the father says, did you call 911? And he goes, no, I'll do that right away. It's like, wait a second, if your wife is in a clump on the floor, you called 911 first. But anyway, when the emergency technicians arrive, he was sitting on a couch, and he pointed and he said, she's over there in the hallway. Now, what type of person is going to sit around with your wife struggling to breathe? But her symptoms was that her situation was that there were 5 minutes where she didn't have blood to her brain, and that was what caused the brain damage. So that was what David said was suspected when it caused the whole problem. Michael didn't have a job. He had a hard time holding down a job, and he ended up living with the parents. And so then for several years, when they were doing the lawsuit to sue to get money for her rehabilitation, you know, he was right there, and they were working together. He even cried in the courtroom in front of the jury, saying that he was committed to her for life and would do everything he can for her rehabilitation, but he needed this large settlement. And so they gave him close to $2 million for her rehabilitation. And David Gibbs went on to say that as soon as he got the money, he took her out of the rehab center and put her in a hospice to die. That he had all rehabilitation stopped, that he wouldn't let any medical attention be done to her. One nurse, he said that her fingers would sort of, you know, be pulled together, and one nurse had woven a washcloth between her fingers. And when he came in one time, he said, who did this? I told that no rehabilitation shall be done. Had all the pictures taken out of the room, all music taken out, the blinds closed, all radios, all visual and audible stimuli were taken out of the room. And then he goes on to say that she didn't even need a feeding tube. that she did eat Jell-O and pudding, and that when they would brush her teeth, she would swallow the saliva and swallow the toothpaste. The only problem was that the nurses' staff didn't want to take the time to feed her, because it took a lot longer. And so they suggested that, look, you know, it'll be better for her. She'll get better nourishment. Just stick the tube in, you know. But their motivation was to save time. But she really didn't need the feeding tube.
Once you put that in, then all you have to do is justify taking it out, and then they die. And this is a very, very clever technique that's used, and it's been used in other cases where they wanted to kill somebody. They said, they have to have a feeding tube because they can't eat or drink. They put the tube in, and then you pull it out, and they could eat or drink, but you don't want them to eat or drink. You want to kill them, and that's exactly what they did here.
Yeah, I mean, so the family was just shocked that as soon as he got the money, that he turned around and used the money to hire these pro-death attorneys. This George Filos advertises that he's a death attorney, and he's been in several cases, and he's into Scientology, and he said that he can tell if a patient wants to die by looking into their eyes.
I think for our listeners, they have to realize that Scientology is certainly one of these occult beliefs. It was created by a man named L. Ron Hubbard, who was into the occult. And unfortunately, they have a whole different perspective and view of life. So, you know, if you're coming in out of Scientology, you certainly are not coming from a pro-Christian or pro-human life support situation. Position.
But on and on, I was just appalled hearing all this. And David Gibbs went on to say that the mother would come in and cradle Terry's head in her arms and would say, say I love you, and she would say I, and Terry would say ah, and say love, and she'd say love, and then he'd say you, and he said she could never get the you down, you know, but she could say the ah and the of, and but she would do it on command. I mean, it wasn't the mother would say it and she would respond. I mean, she had, I talked to people who had family members that were in a lot worse vegetative state, and they said that she was miles ahead of their children, you know, that were handicapped. But what happened was the husband wanted to divorce her, and, you know, the suspecting of domestic violence could possibly be a motive of why he didn't want her to be rehabilitated to testify against him. A week before the feeding tube was pulled out, a millionaire in California offered Michael Schiavo $1 million if he would just let her live, and he turned it down. Again, why would you do that unless you simply did not want this person rehabilitated?
But wasn't the family willing to take her home and look after her and just care for her at home?
Oh, yeah, they were begging to do that. You know, the last day, a week into the starving, the family went into the room. She said it was just a real small room. He said you could almost reach across it. I mean, you could touch the bed with one hand and the window with the other hand. He was in there, and Father Frank Pavone, the last several weeks, was called in by the family, and he was on the very short list of people who were allowed to visit. Father Pavone said that, and I was with him, and he spoke at this event I was at. He said that while he was sitting at the bed, there were two police officers watching him at all times to make sure that he didn't give her any water. And when he would bend over to, like, pray in her ear, they would move from the side of him to the bottom of the bed so they could get a clear line of sight to see if he was doing anything.
In other words, the police officers were there to make sure she died.
Yeah,
they were simply carrying out the orders of the court. They were simply doing what they were ordered to do. That was Eichmann's defense when he was taken back to Israel. I was simply carrying out orders. It was all perfectly legal what happened in Hitler's Germany. The judges decreed it. And if you haven't seen that wonderful film, A Judgment at Nuremberg, you still get it with Spencer Tracy and Burt Lancaster. And the judge's defense was, well, we just thought we did what best for society. I'll go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, when you see the Father Pavone said one time, he had a small handheld watch in his hand, and he was on the side of the bed next to her, and the police officer said, "What's that that you have in your hand?" And he opens it up, and it was a watch. He goes, "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to confiscate that." And he's like, "What, do you think I have water in the watch and I'm going to drip it in her mouth?" He said it was so surreal to have the police officers guarding to make sure that she died. And
I think this is really what's so significant about this. There was tremendous political pressure to want to kill this woman. Now, you can argue, well, is it worthwhile living? That is not up for me or the judge or even the husband to determine. That's really up to God. God has his rules, and when we start avoiding those or violating those rules of God, why, we leave our society open for terrible, terrible judgment, I believe.
Well, you bring up a good point. You touched on it earlier in Germany. The Holocaust didn't just happen overnight. It started in the Weimar Republic. They adopted the idea of quality of life versus sanctity of life, that the people, based on the Hegelian utilitarian ethic, that your worth is dependent on your utility, that if you can contribute something to the whole, your life is worth something. And of course, we teach that in our schools called situation ethics. If there's too many people on a lifeboat, the little kid has to decide which one's, useless and shove him over the side. And of course, that's played out every week in this Survivor series, the program on TV. If you can contribute something, you get to stay on the island. If you don't, you get voted off. So we're being conditioned in this utilitarian ethic that your worth is dependent on your utility, which is totally contrary to the founding fathers and the Declaration of Independence, where they said that you're endowed by your creator with certain inalienable rights, that you have these rights not because you're useful to society. You have these rights because you're made in the image of God.
And, I think it's really so interesting that you point out the Survivor, how so much of our television is being used to create our beliefs, to create how we feel about things, how we address the issues. In fact, everything on television, really almost everything there, has in one way or another an importance in altering our Judeo-Christian values and replacing them with the humanistic values, which represent the real religion of America today. No longer a Christian nation, but a humanist nation. All we have to do is get those crazy Christians out there and crazy fundamentalist Jews to accept the idea that life has no real value, other than, of course, how it can benefit the state.
Well, all the programs, like the American Idol, if you don't cut the mustard, you get voted off the show. The Donald Trump thing, you're fired. It's all based on a group of people, and you whittle through, and the ones that don't meet up are rejected. They even have the horrible date program where they're, they choose and they reject. But it's different from the Judeo-Christian ethic of, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, that, whatever you do unto the least of these, my brethren, you've done unto me, Mother Teresa, reaching out and taking the disadvantaged and lifting them up, whereas these programs are all, hey, you're not good enough, you get kicked out. It is conditioning the public and that's what happened in Germany. They even had math problems in the school textbooks.
Hold that thought right there, Bill, because we're going to be bringing our stations right back now. Well, we were just talking about how, of course, so much of television, so much of what's going on today is to condition us to say, well, certain lives are worth important, certain ones are not. On the Survivor, well, if you don't benefit the group, why you get voted off the island? We see this recurrent theme, of making value judgments as to who will get thrown off the show, and of course, even taking this back to Hitler's Germany, why there were certain lives that were deemed not worth living. And these same ideas, of course, are being increasingly applied here in the United States as television is used to change our attitude. And Bill was saying that even in the textbooks in Hitler's Germany, what was that all about?
Well, they would compare the cost of keeping an elderly person alive with the cost of a young couple getting a loan for a starter home. And, of course, the kids doing the math problems say, gee, it costs so much money to keep this old person alive, and that money could help you know, a dozen people get loans to have their starter homes. And so they adopted this idea of Lebensunwertes Leben, which means life unworthy of life. And they considered it an act of mercy to free somebody from their body of pain. And that they even had films that they called Ich Klage An, was, it means I accuse in German, was this famous film that won an award at the Vienna Film Festival, where they actually, a man euthanized his wife in one room while he was playing the piano in the other, you know, and it was a real person dying on the film while they were filming it. And so they used the movies to condition the public, and what happened was Germany went to nationalized health care. That's why they call it the National Socialist Party. It was a socialist country. Even the swastika was a double S for the SS, which meant socialist, you know, the party there. And so the government took care of everybody's health care in Germany. It was great. I mean, you didn't have to pay for your health care, and everything was fine until their economy cratered, and they had a double, triple-digit inflation. And then the people cried out, government, do something about it, cut all these expenses. So the government decided to cut useless expenses from the budget, like keeping alive retarded, insane, epileptic, chronically ill. They sent them to the gas chambers. And then after that, they got rid of the elderly in government institutions that had no relatives and no financial resources. I mean, these people certainly had a low quality of life. Nobody ever visited them. They were all alone. And so they sent them to the gas chambers. And then they got rid of the parasites on the state, the convicts, the murderers, the street bums, the beggars. They called them useless eaters. And they thought, why should we have to pay taxes to support these murderers in prison or in welfare for these useless eaters who don't contribute back to society? And so they were rounded up and thrown in the gas chambers. And then after that, they got rid of the ideologically unwanted, the Dietrich Bonhoeffers, those other 12 million that you mentioned that were religious protesters. And then finally, basing it on evolution, they said the Aryan race was more evolved than the other races, and so they called them Ubermenschen, Supermen, Ubermenschen. And so they wanted to eliminate the inferior races from the human gene pool, and they called them the Untermenschen, under mankind. And they considered gypsies and Jews and so forth as Untermenschen. And this was, of course, based on Ernst Rudin was a advisor to Hitler, and he had worked previously with Margaret Sanger, the lady who started Planned Parenthood, and she came up with the idea of eugenics, where, you know, you wanted to eliminate the weeds from the human garden and to, you know, sterilize unfit races of people. And anyway, so this whole thought went in to getting rid of an inferior race, and the Nazis considered Jews inferior, so they sent them to the gas chambers. But all that horrible Holocaust started with this idea of Lebensunwertes Leben, life unworthy of life, equality of life versus sanctity of life. And this Judge Greer, who, by the way, these liberal legal organizations are giving him an award, but this Judge Greer said that he didn't think her life was worth living.
Is that so reminiscent of the life that was not worth living? That was, of course, the justification used in Hitler's Germany. And, of course, it was Rudolf Hess speaking publicly who said, Nazism is nothing more than applied science. Nazism is simply applied science. And once we accept that, of course, when science, of course, comes from knowledge and truth, who could be against applied science? That's what the extermination of the Jews was. Cleaning up the gene pool and the gypsies, and then of course the 12 million others, many of whom were Christians. Well, after all, you have to be a little crazy to be a Christian, don't you? So believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we're well on our way down the slippery slope. And the fact that the media shows you over and over again those films of Michael Schiavo bending over his wife that had been taken months ahead of time and didn't tell you about what really happened. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Bill Federer. Bill, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Well, Father Frank Cavone said that it was anything but a beautiful death. He said it was horrible, that every day they would go in there and they would see her wasting away more and more. He said it was so ironic because there was a nightstand next to her bed and somebody had put a vase with flowers in it, and the vase had water in it. And he thought, here, if I were to take some water out of this vase and put it in her mouth, it would be a crime. And, of course, there were two policemen in the room watching his every move. And then David Gibbs said that, you know, he visited her almost every day with the family. And after the feeding tube was taken out, a week went by, and she was starving. And he said they went in there, and the mother was just so visibly disturbed. She had, you know, cradled Terry's head in her arms, and the mother started crying, and then Terry started sobbing. And he said Terry's face was sunken in. He said it was sort of like you could see her skull, and like a black eye only went down almost the whole entire length of her cheek. He said her mouth was like totally dry, and her skin was cracked, and they were, you know, would rub lotion on the skin where it was cracked, but they wouldn't put any water in her. And but he says that here Terry losing water already, but here she was sobbing and crying. And then after a few minutes, he said that the mom said she couldn't take it anymore, and she left the room and never went back. That was the last time that she saw her. And David Gibbs said that here he was standing at the foot of the bed watching this scene of a mother cradling her daughter's head, and they're both sobbing. And he said, for the first time in my life, I was embarrassed to be an American. He said, the first time in my life, I was embarrassed to be an American witnessing this woman being killed by the court system. He says, the judge never once visited her. Now, you would think if you were going to sentence somebody to die that you would at least visit them once. He never did. And he bragged about that there were no Ten Commandments hanging outside of his courtroom door. Of course, he was making reference, you know, to Judge Roy Moore and the other ones who did have the Ten Commandments out there. It was just a travesty. And, of course, 5 minutes before she died, Michael Schiavo came in and made them all leave. And then after she died, Father Frank Pavone wanted to go in, and since she was Catholic, he wanted to pray over her. And they wouldn't let him in. And he said, you know, a scene...
Hold that thought for just a moment as I bring our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is William Veteran. He's just describing the scene here. Of course, the pictures you saw on television of this woman looking so, you know, at least she's, skin is clear, your eyes are, you know, looking at her husband. But those were not the pictures, because they wouldn't allow any pictures. As her eyes began to sink, as her complexion grew gray, as her cheekbones began to exude, as her skin became parched, as they killed her, she could have drunk water. She was capable of drinking and swallowing water. But they wouldn't allow it because they wanted to kill her. And that was what it was really all about. And that was never brought out. All you saw was this picture over and over and over again on your television screen, creating your reality. And you must understand that your reality is created by what you thought you saw on television. And then, of course, you know, the lawyer saying, oh, she is so peaceful. She looks so good. She's not suffering at all. She's not having any pain. Death with dignity. You see, there are people who hate humanity and would have mass killing in America. But they first have to condition the minds of the American people and bring the judicial system in line. And once the judges say it's all right, why, of course, they can kill anybody they want to.
Well, Father Pavone said a scene that he'll remember for the rest of his life was he and David Gibbs standing in the doorway of her room, not being allowed in by Michael Schiavo and the policeman. And so there in the doorway, in the hallway, they bowed their heads and said a prayer for Terry and for the family. And but, you know, here in America, in this great country where the Statue of Liberty holds up her torch high and says, send me your poor, your you know, vulnerable. And here, the world witnessed, and I mean, the murder of an innocent woman, totally capable of she did not have a terminal disease.
And she was able to swallow water. She could have taken food and
food.
Right. But they would not feed her because it was easier to have in the tube. Then they take out the tube and they have the justification for the murder. And the fact, in fact, that one thing you commented when we were off the air, that the lawyer said as he looked at this scene, it was the first time in his life he was ever ashamed to be an American. And everybody listening to this program bears part of that shame. If you've not spoken out against this and pointing out that they know exactly what they're doing, and of course all the posturing in Washington, D.C., and in the state capitol by Jeb Bush, you know, it was all posturing. Jeb Bush had the ability to sign an executive order. The president had the ability to sign an executive order. If Janet Reno could send 125 armed SWAT team members with automatic rifles down to kidnap Elian Gonzalez so they could send him back to Cuba to build up the stature of Fidel Castro, certainly why President Bush could have sent down five police officers and said, we are taking over here, you are in violation of the 14th Amendment, you do not have the right to take away this woman's life. And he could have done it by executive order and nobody would have objected. I believe that the majority of the people would have championed him, but it was all play acting. It was smoke and mirrors. It was rhetoric of a reality. We want to pander to the public and make them think that we're doing something, but we're really not going to. So much of what goes on today is simply that. It's for the psychological impact on the American people, and they don't understand they're constantly being manipulated by the invisible hand that controls the media, and specifically television. Those pictures of Michael bending over his pretty wife, there is what you think you saw, but that wasn't what was really going on, was it?
No, and it's, David said it was so obvious. For 7 years, when they were fighting to get money for her rehabilitation, I mean, I may have the number of years not remembered correctly, but for a number of years when they were suing to get money for her rehabilitation, he mentioned several times that he did not know what her wishes were as far as, you know, a living will and, you know, and no sooner did he get the money than all of a sudden he remembered that when she was 21 years old, in the first year of their 5-year marriage, when the first year, he says that he remembers they were watching TV and somebody was on a ventilator, and he said that he remembered her saying, oh, who would want to live like that?
But Terry wasn't on a ventilator. She could breathe. She could swallow. She could eat. She could recognize. She could respond. She wasn't on a ventilator.
You're exactly right. But this was, you know, you think, well, what evidence did this judge have to sentence her to death? The only evidence was Michael Schiavo saying that he remembered, as soon as he got, you know, as soon as he got the $2 million settlement money, he remembered that, you know, 15 years earlier, watching TV when she was just 21 years old, he said that she saw somebody and said, who would want to live like that? Now, based on that hearsay from somebody who clearly has a conflict of interest, that should not have been allowed as evidence in court to kill her.
Well, first of all, Garcia was living with another woman. He had had 2 children with this other woman. He was living in adultery. There are laws in Florida on adultery. Whether you agree with them or not doesn't matter. They were on the book. He could have been arrested and put in prison and deprived of his right to determine the future of the woman he wanted to kill. He wanted to kill her. If he was dedicated to his wife, he wouldn't have fathered 2 children with another woman. I mean, this is just the most ridiculous thing in the world. But, you know, the thing is, the judge got away with this, and what is really so frightening is that the other judges all support him.
Yeah.
In fact, when this went to the federal court, it was the Republican judges including William Pryor, of course, who'd betrayed Judge Roy Moore and then been rewarded for getting Judge Roy Moore out of his position as Chief Supreme Court Justice, who was rewarded for his the betrayal of his promise and Judge Roy Moore. by being given by the Bush administration an interim appointment on the circuit court that actually voted on Terry Schiavo. And, of course, the William Pryor voted just the way President Bush wanted him to vote. He voted to kill her.
Well, another thing, I said, well, David, I said, weren't there nurses or somebody that could testify, you know, on behalf? He goes, there were five of them that had their written affidavits, sworn testimonies, and Judge Greer would not let them be admitted in court.
Now, in fact, I read one of those affidavits where the woman was talking about how, you know, she would, many times Terry would respond to her, and she would put those notes in the progress chart, the nursing notes, and somebody would remove those notes. Her statements on Terry's responses, we removed them from the notes the next morning. So there were people there working in the hospice who wanted to remove any mention of the fact that Terry was responsive and was communicating at least as best she could with this nurse. This nurse realized it was murder, and she, in this affidavit she wrote out saying, somebody would come in and remove my notes. How could you do that? That's a violation of the law. But all of this is violation of the law. They wanted to kill her. And when you understand that, it all makes sense.
Well, and then another nurse said that when Michael would come to visit, he would close the door and turn the thermostat way down, so I guess to give her, you know, pneumonia. And one time after he left, she went into a seizure, and they did a blood test and found out that her insulin levels were way off.
Probably she was hypoglycemic. You give insulin, it just knocks the sugar level way down. That was probably what they would have been testing.
And they found that there were needle holes and needle marks in her arm, and there was an empty vial in the trash can where evidently Michael, it indicates that he possibly injected her. But
that is a favorite way in the hospices. They are actually killing people today is giving them an overdose of insulin. I had a nurse who was caring for a diabetic patient, and he was caring for him at home. A very caring nurse, one of my surgical techs. He told me the people from the hospice who were coming around to see him regularly said, "Why don't you just give him an overdose of insulin?" And my nurse friend said, "I couldn't do that. That would kill him." Oh, well, he'd be better off that way. And this was somebody from the hospice who was visiting. Ladies and gentlemen, there really are people in America who are evil. And until we recognize that, you can't recognize anything going on.
Wow. Well, that's what those nurses testified. But they were not allowed to give testimony in the court because of this Judge Greer. What you had mentioned, that all the other judges up and down the line stood behind him. It was such a travesty to see this. David said that last day when the mother was crying and Terry was crying and the mother left the room, as she was going out, she mentioned to David, she goes, "How can they do this to my little girl?" And I mean, the mother saying, "How can they do this to my little girl? How can they just decide to kill her?
How can we justify murder in America?" Well, I suppose if you're not concerned about what's going on in Iraq today, why should you be concerned about killing just one person here when you think of the number that are dying in Iraq? And yet, of course, it is the same anti-human philosophy that is beginning to permeate every aspect of our society. And as it happens, then no man's life or family are really safe.
And it's a repeat of what's happened in Germany. You know, I love Mother Teresa's attitude. Her idea of death with dignity is not to pull the plug. Her idea of death with dignity is to go to Burma and India and find the person dying in the gutter and pull them out and give them a bath and a meal and treat them like a human being so that they can have dignity when they die, rather than a horrible, undignified way of starving them to death. You think we wouldn't have done that to a convicted criminal? If you had dogs or horses, you know, on your property and you didn't feed them or give them water, the animal shelter people will come and remove the animals. They will take away your right to be a guardian of that animal. If you have children in your home and you don't feed your children, they'll come, the Family Protective Services will come and take the children out of your home. You will lose your right to be a custodian over them. And so, by all accounts, Michael Schiavo should have lost his rights to be the guardian over Terry. But again, this judge was so totally committed to having her killed, and to think that the American Bar Association, the president, wrote a letter defending the judge. And I asked
Michael, think that tells us a lot about the American Bar Association, doesn't it? The morality of the leaders of our legal profession.
And I asked David, I said, you know, why...
Now, this is David. This is David Gibbs, the pro-life attorney who is representing the Shivas.
I said, with all this pressure that came on this judge, you know, why didn't he wake up and realize what was going on? And he said that he got this attitude like, you know, this is my story. I'm sticking to it. I'm digging my heels in. The more pressure you give, the more I'm going to stand by my decision. It was almost like he, you know, the idea that, you know, if you challenge their decision, they take it as a personal affront, and they want to even stick more and more to their decision out of pride.
Well, you see, you could understand why one judge would be corrupt, but are all of the judges corrupt? And in fact, you know, the federal level, my understanding is the Democrats were the ones who voted, you know, in favor of not going along with this. It was all universal, the Republicans, judges, and I'm a lifelong Republican, so I think I can speak out against this. I said, no, we will not intervene here, just let her die.
Yeah, well, this judge had claimed to have been a Republican, and I mean, I can't believe that, but he said he was.
But they see, the thing is, there are a lot of people within the Republican Party who do not value the life. This is what, it's not a party issue. It is a humane issue. It has to do with whether you think there is a right, whether there are absolutes, whether God does say, thou shalt not kill. And if you don't believe that, then maybe it's expedient to go ahead and kill those who have lives that are not worth living. But where is the outcry from the American people? That's what I want to know. I mean, you know, they can get hundreds of thousands of people out marching for civil rights, but when they're killing a white woman in Florida, why, of course, nobody seems to really care.
Well,
they got maybe, what, a couple of hundred people out at a demonstration.
And the problem is that people weren't getting the real news, and so it was hard for them to, I mean, I even talked to Christians, and they were like, oh, if I was in that state, I'd want them to go ahead and send me on. It's like, wait a second, she wasn't in any state. She wasn't, you know, on a ventilator or any life support. And, you know, who are we to decide if somebody else's life isn't worth living? Make that decision, then no life is protected.
Right. Well, let's go to Roger, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, if you please. Do you have any additional insight to what I had only heard as a single Sunday morning early news blurb on the radio, that this same Judge Greer, and for all I know, self-assigned, was to have exclusive purview over, and this is just a week or two after her death, over what medical, court, whatever other records were to be released to the public?
Do you know anything at all about that?
Yeah, right. And that's exactly right. And also, the medical examiner is in that county, is under that same jurisdiction, that same judge. And so we couldn't expect to get any type of revealing autopsy of, you know, because there was strongly suspected that she had suffered some domestic violence. And, you know, but then her body was ordered to be cremated by Michael Shivo after this, this coroner's report that he was just, you know, friends with the judge. So it's sort of like a small little corrupt county was able to get away with this. And
yeah, I think that probably what you heard is right, Roger. And thank you so very much for really calling. I think that's a very important point, and I haven't heard this emphasized, but I think it should be brought out. Thanks so much. Let's go to Dan, who's calling us from Washington. Hi, Dan. What part of Washington are you in?
Eastern Washington.
Go ahead. I have a question for our guest.
I know you've always advocated sort of the rule of law as the way that the country should be, and I understood that in Florida, or at least in that county, that the rule of law states that the spouse is the one who makes the decision on sort of life and death, like those sort of situations, and that So it was really in the purview of the law what happened.
Well, you mean it's perfectly all right for a husband who has no longer really a husband because he's having an adulterous affair. And, of course, according to the law, he could have been arrested and put in prison and deprived of his spousal rights. You see, that is the law of Florida. Why shouldn't that law be enforced?
Well, and plus they did pass a law saying you can't withhold food and water.
Right. Anyway, thanks so much. Dan, you want to hang on?
That's okay. You answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. This is a very controversial issue. People say, as long as the judge says it's all right, we should go by the law. That's basically what our last caller was saying. The law says that the husband has the right to kill his wife, so it's all right to do it. It's the law. How do you feel? We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Barbara calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, or I guess from SoCal. Barbara, did you have a question for our guest?
Actually, a couple comments and a question. I had heard that the money that Michael had been awarded for Terry's care actually was running down and that there was not that much left.
Do you know anything at all about that, Bill?
He got $1.8 million, and that the moment he got it, he took her out of all rehab. And then he began to spend the money on attorneys to have her killed. And he ran through the money using it for attorneys.
And I understand that somehow or other that the state was picking up part of the expense there at the hospice. Do you know what you can talk
about
that?
Right. Yeah, the state was paying most of the hospice expenses anyway.
Right.
And but, you know, you had brought up a point before that the rule of law, that there's laws that were passed in Florida that said that under no circumstances can you withhold food and water from somebody. Well, a liberal judge decided to invalidate that law. And so then it comes down to, what is the law? Is the law what the people decide through their elected representatives and through passing a law? I mean, it seems to me anybody that studies government, you have the House, the Senate, and the President. They're the ones that make the laws. And all the judges are supposed to do is to make sure that the laws are carried out in accordance with the intentions of the people that wrote the laws.
But, you know, originally, of course, law was to be based upon God's law, and it wasn't really what the president wanted or what the legislator wanted, but originally our law was based upon God's law. How far we've gotten away from that. Barbara, did you have another question?
Just one other thing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. Michael's attorney had addressed the Hemlock Society.
Yes.
Also, you know, and I believe Michael also was quite in favor of the euthanasia movement.
So what about that, Bill? Do you know?
Comment on that?
Oh, definitely, yeah. The attorney, George Fellows, was outspoken in advocating death, and he was involved in several other cases where, you know, they took away the rights of people and had them killed. One of the things, I was doing a radio show in Florida at the time, and a caller called in and said, you know, years from now, there's going to be written a book called The Perfect Murder, where you, you know, if you strangle your wife and bring her to the point of death, but she doesn't die, she's brain damaged, then you sue to get millions of dollars, and then once you get the millions of dollars, you just withhold the life support and have her die, and you know, I mean, it's the perfect murder. This attorney...
Hold that thought there for just a moment here. Okay, fine. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is William Federer. Bill, go ahead.
But you know, back to the caller's you know, point there, it's one of those confusing situations, but when you get down to it, she was not given her rights as a human being, and we've had this terrible tragedy.
And that's a terrible, terrible tragedy. But you see, it reflects on every American, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And the church one day will stand, you know, before the bar of judgment for the failure of the American church to take a stand in times like this. Anything else you'd like to say, Barbara?
No, thank you. Just thank you so much for bringing all these facts.
God bless you. Thank you so much for calling. And, well, our guest has been William Federer. I'm going to have to let you go, Bill. Thank you so very much for being with us. And of course, would you like to get your website out there? We do carry many of your books, but if people would like to get to your website, how can they reach you?
Oh, thanks, Dan. It's AmericanMinute.com. AmericanMinute.com. I send out a free daily email called an American Minute, things that happened each day in American history. And then 888-USA-WORD is the toll-free number, 888-USA-WORD. And I just recently did a new book called Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion.
Did you send us some of those you were going to?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, we will be carrying Backfired, and you want to get it. We'll get Bill back to give you the background of this. This is an amazing book. The Origins of Tolerance in America came from the Christian Church. Oh, my secretary just said they're in stock right now, so we have them. Thank you so much for being with us, and I look forward to getting you back again.
God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been William Federer, certainly one of my favorite guests. We carry his book, America's God and Country. If you don't have it, you should. I look right here from where I'm sitting before the microphone, the board, and there's a copy of William Federer's America's God and Country. We have it both in book and in CD form. The CD is great with a lot of additional information. We have his other books, Backfired, his book on the George Washington Carver, on Santa Claus, and you may wonder what Santa Claus is all about, but there really was a Santa Claus, and then of course on St. Patrick. Wonderful, wonderful stories for yourself, for your children, wholesome stories that of course point to the voice where right and wrong comes from. It comes from God, it comes from the Bible. So when we start to intervene and say, well, you know, the law says this, the law says that, the law can say anything, but what would God say? And that's really what it's all about. Some people would say, well, I wouldn't want to live like that if it was really me. And I would tell you, I wouldn't want to live like that if it was me. But the thing is, it's not up to me to decide when I'm going to be born or when I'm going to die. And if you believe that there is a God that determines the course of human events, that each of us are created in the image and likeness of God, and he does play a part in our lives, why, it's not us to say who will live and who will die, and simply to destroy those lives that are not worth living. Although there are many people in America who really have adopted the Nazi philosophy without even realizing it, and that is that there are some lives that are not worth living, and the courts will decide. We will be a nation of laws, and the judges make the laws. So tragically, our judges today are the victims of a liberal education, and they look to their intellect rather than to God as the source of the guidance. And when that happens, of course, a nation really is in real trouble. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. We do carry the Berkey products. If you're interested in getting them and you get them through us, why, you'll get a four-tape set or video we produced, and then if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, March newsletter, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to, well, the next hour of the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Shane Ellison, and Shane has his master's in chemistry. And you had actually worked for some of the drug companies in the past, didn't you, at one time?
Yes, I did.
All right, fine. And but now, of course, Shane is trying to let people understand some of the disastrous consequences of what's really going on as far as the medicines that you are being told that you must take. And certainly one of the most beautiful examples of that was the Vioxx scam. And those of you who have never read what Dr. Graham said when he testified before the Senate last November, need to get hold of that testimony. We do offer that, or this will probably be my newsletter, not this month, but next month. And we certainly go into the background of what Dr. Graham pointed out, that before Vioxx was ever released on the market, why the Merck company had a study known as 090 that showed that you increase the incidence of heart attacks sevenfold. That's 700%. With low-dose Vioxx. A year later, they had another study that was called the Vigor study. And that showed that you increased the incidence of heart attacks 500%, and that was with high-dose Vioxx. The drug was marketed, and you'll remember those wonderful television advertisements with a woman on her ice skates skating across the rink with the children behind her, and the happy music, and oh, what a beautiful day, or what a happy day, and they knew that they were going to dramatically increase the incidence of heart disease. Now, they would have, of course, continued killing people with this medication until, except for Dr. David Graham, who actually got an article cleared for publication and then testified before the Senate. But you don't have to worry. Merck immediately pulled their medication off the market because they were killing people. It was very obvious they were killing people. There were already class action suits. But the Bush administration immediately got the law changed so that that they would now would have to bring any class action suits in federal courts where they could tie them up for years. The FDA convened a panel of 31 members, 10 of them whom came from the drug industry, to find out if Vioxx was safe, and you'd never guess what happened. By a one-vote margin, they voted to put Vioxx back on the market, and it will continue killing people. They know what it's doing. According to Dr. David Graham, he feels that probably between 88,000 and 139,000 Americans had a heart attack or a stroke because of this. He said that's very conservative. He quoted another study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, 160,000. And that was just with one of those terrible drugs. But the average American has not been told that. And all they're told is, well, this might double your incidence of getting heart disease. No, it doesn't double your incidence. It's dramatically higher than that, and they know that. But because they control the media, you're not going to hear that. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the statin drugs. Shane, why don't we get off into this subject, because you've done a wonderful job going into the background of the health myths surrounding statin and many other things. So why don't you begin telling us a little bit about it?
Thank you. The health myth that I write about in my book, Health Myths Exposed, is that high cholesterol is a major factor for heart disease. And of course, this myth, being promoted by the drug companies, then ignites a scare within the community, within the United States, within the world, that people need to lower their cholesterol levels.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, our guest this evening is Shane Ellison. We're talking about the this whole statin scam, and it really is a scam. They are selling billions of dollars of the various statin drugs, and there are a number of them on the market. And we are told, oh, my goodness, you know, if you are a woman, you've just got to get onto them. You've got a cholesterol that's over 200. You've got to get 230. You know, you've got to get onto these drugs. If you're anything over 200, why, you're in the danger level. And yet there are no studies to verify that at all. If you are an older individual and you've had no incidents of heart attack, there's no evidence at all that these help at all. Even if you are in a middle-aged male and you've had no incidents of heart attack, the number of heart attacks that are prevented by this are negligible, but there are all sorts of complications, including cancer. So, Shane, why don't you pick up and tell the story?
So with that myth that high cholesterol leads to heart disease, millions of people now are trying to lower their cholesterol. Men, women, they're even advocating the use among children because of the health myth that high cholesterol leads to heart disease. Their answer to the problem is the statin drug, Lipitor, Pravacol, Zocor. And they're promoting this use under the auspices of the statin drug trials. And they're demanding that, or asserting that, these drug trials prove indefinitely that they prevent heart disease. But when you look at without the statistical contortionist, and you look at the full data, you'll see that not a single one of the statin drug trials showed that the cholesterol-lowering drugs prevented heart disease. At best, it was a 3% reduction at best, and that was most likely due to bias. But
yeah,
even then,
course,
that 3% of reduction is among men. It's never been proven among women.
And I think this is really one of the most important things. All of these studies were done on men, and when they did evaluate, of course, the women who were in these studies, they found out that it really didn't do any good in women. Wasn't that pretty much the impression you got?
Yes, that's true, exactly. They haven't been done on women. There's been no large studies done on women. The only studies have been recently where they perform what's known as a meta-analysis, and they take a few women from each study, and they combine the results, and they see that, in fact, lowering cholesterol among women does not prevent heart disease.
And, of course, then the subject is age makes a lot of difference. They want to get everybody, and men, all men have to get their cholesterol down below 200, or they'd like to get it down below 180 or maybe 160. And yet, actually, in elderly men, it doesn't do any good, and doesn't it do potential harm? What do the studies actually show as far as cutting back or death related to high cholesterol? What are the absolute figures showing the mortality if you have a cholesterol, say, between 200 and 230, and you're a person, say, over 65?
That's a great question, because if a person is going to take any type of cholesterol-lowering intervention, then they face the dangers of having low cholesterol. Now, this is extremely hard for most people to grasp because they've been browbeaten to believe that low cholesterol is better. But what we see is that when you lower the cholesterol, getting to 180, total cholesterol levels of 180, 170, 160, the biggest danger is cancer. Most in particular, lung cancer. And what we find is that for every one drop per year, there's a 14% increase in death rates.
Now, basically, they've known this for some time, that it increased the cancer rate in animals, didn't they?
Exactly.
All right. Now, but I was a little surprised that you're talking about every one point of cholesterol increased the cancer rate 14%.
Well, it increased the overall mortality rate.
Mortality rate, not the cancer rate.
Not the cancer rate. We see an increase in cancer rate, yes, in animals, but we also see it in the cholesterol-lowering drug trials, particularly with Pravacol. We found a 1,500% increase in cancer among users of Pravacol relative to the placebo group.
Well, now, of course, there is something known as the Delaney Amendment, which forbids prescribing or the FDA approving any drug that produces cancer in animals. So how did they get around that, or did they simply violate the law and ignore it?
Yeah, well, they get around it because the whole drug industry has been democratized. It's just a matter of vote. Majority rules, not science.
But science, it has to be science. It doesn't matter how the majority votes, because the majority can be bought off, as they were with that Viagra study. 10 of the 31 people on the committee had ties to the drug companies. How can you get an impartial, situation? And nine of the ten people who had ties to the drug company voted to put Vioxx back on the market. If it hadn't been for their votes, there'd been overwhelming majority who said, don't put Vioxx back on the market. It's killing people.
Yeah, you would have used science to dictate that, but science doesn't dictate health. Democracy does.
And I think that you have to realize they've probably been, with all of the various the COX-2 inhibitors, and we're talking about Vioxx and Celebrex and all the others, there are probably over 100,000 people have died, and totally unnecessarily, heart attacks, strokes. They knew this was going to happen. They knew this from even before they were put on the market. And the American people are not being told that. All you're being told is the committee voted. But do you know who's on the committee? Do you know that some of the people on the committee said, we've got to go by science. Majority vote doesn't make science. What do we know? We know this drug is killing people. And they've put it back on the market and said, ask your doctor. If your doctor says all right, your doctor never read Dr. Graham's testimony. We have it. We'll be glad to send it to any of our listeners out there. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, or it will be included in our newsletter, if not this month, but month after that, the entire text of his testimony, totally blocked out by the controlled media, because the last thing they want the American people to know is that the government is allowing them intentionally to be poisoned. Now, let's get back then to the statin drugs, and we're talking about the incidence of cancer, and you point out that if you're taking this one statin drug, what is it, Pavacol?
Pavacol, yes. It showed a 1,500% increase in cancer rates among users.
1,500% increase in cancer rates among users, and of course there are increase in cancer rates in the others. They just don't have those studies, do they?
No, they don't, because studies usually don't last more than 5 years, and it takes at minimum 5 years for cancer to develop. I mean, even with heavy smoking, it would take more than 5 years for cancer to develop. But what's interesting is it's not just a statistical association between Pravacol and cancer. They've actually hypothesized a very good link or mechanism or mode of action of the statin drugs, and that being they increase a molecule in the body known as vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF. And when that increases, you increase angiogenesis. It's kind of like a prime medium for the growth of cancer. Interestingly enough, you can cross-reference that with green tea, and you find out that green tea prevents cancer because it inhibits VEGF.
All right. Well, I think that, of course, there is so much about the statin drugs that really is totally fraudulent. As you go through the statistics, you find out that, you know, if you give them to older people in an effort to lower their cholesterol, they get into all sorts of problems. They get to the point where they can't think, and they can't think clearly. And that is because cholesterol is such an important part of the makeup of your brain. Your brain is primarily fat and water, and you limit the cholesterol. Why, there have even been people who've actually got to the point where they lost their jobs. They couldn't even think. You comment about some fellow who's the head of a CEO of a major corporation. He couldn't even balance his checkbook and lost his job because he was on statin drugs.
Yeah, it's deteriorating the myelin sheath, like a copper wire has rubber over it, so that message can pass through, those electrons can pass through. The brain has a myelin sheath, so memory can pass through each cell. And the cholesterol, you lower it, that myelin sheath breaks down. The end result, you lose memory, you lose focus.
And, of course, they know all of these things. They just don't want the average individual to know this. So what about this CoQ10 that actually the statin drugs really lower the CoQ10, doesn't it?
Cancer, we've got memory loss, and then the Achilles heel of the statin drug is the depletion of CoQ10, which is a coenzyme in the cell, especially in the heart, to produce ATP, or the energy source. So the heart can continually beating, and if you take a statin drug, you lower CoQ10, you lower the energy levels within the heart. The heart begins to weaken, and we have what's known as myopathy, or the heart congestive heart failure.
And, of course, the thing is that the average doctor, he really doesn't know. The company is not going to tell him that if he gives this medication, why, it's going to lower the CoQ10, and the patient may actually go into congestive heart failure. So he doesn't know. He's not going to tell you, and you're going to get into all sorts of complications without this. In fact, you have to understand how medicine works. I know because I practiced it. And, you know, you don't have time to read all of the detailed analysis of all these medications, but they send some rather attractive individual, a very affable, likable young man or a very attractive young woman around to your office, and they're there with free samples for you, and they're telling you how wonderful this medicine is and all the wonderful studies that tell how this is really giving dramatic increase in mortality, and people aren't dying, and you've got to get that cholesterol down. Would you like to talk a little bit about how this whole scam is used and how they use these figures, the absolute mortality and the relative mortality, or the absolute improvement and the relative improvement, and how they toss these figures around to confuse people intentionally so the doctor really doesn't understand, it's not doing any good?
Yeah, that's a great point, because that's how most doctors and the general public are deceived, and I just refer to them simply as statistical contortionists. And basically, it can get extremely complicated. Statistics are probably the most difficult part of science or every study to grasp. And what's happening is that there's a difference between absolute mortality rates and relative mortality rates.
Explain, what's the difference between absolute mortality and relative mortality?
Yeah, if you're looking at relative mortality, which is what the drug companies use, then you're just looking at the benefits of the group that received the drug. So if you have heart disease, for instance, you can say that the relative decrease in overall mortality was 20%. But by doing that, you're discarding the placebo group. And when you bring this placebo group in, you have to use absolute mortality. And that's the comparison of each. So,
no, you may have, you can only say, well, see, we cut back the heart attack rate by 20%, but if you compare it with a placebo, it was only maybe a percent and a half. In other words, the placebo group had, an 18.5 or 19% decrease in heart attacks as well.
Yeah.
And so, but you put these figures out here, and unless you know what they're talking about, why, you can't figure out that you really haven't had much of any improvement. I thought it was really so interesting what it says on the label for Lipitor, which so many people are taking. And what does that label say about how well it works?
It says Lipitor has, in the fine print, of course, because when you look at the absolute, not the relative, which is what the drug reps are using, when you look at the absolute mortality rates, it'll show with Lipitor, which they've admitted on their ad, that Lipitor has not been shown to prevent heart disease.
Lipitor,
because again, they're
not
discarding the placebo group. They're actually using the placebo group.
Lipitor has not been shown to prevent heart attacks. Now, you have to understand that many heart attacks are related to homocysteine. Many heart attacks are related to something called C-reactive protein, their reflection of inflammation in the wall. At least half the heart attacks have nothing at all to do with cholesterol or cholesterol levels at all. And there's so many things that can be done in the way of vitamin C and other non-toxic substances you can take. But the average doctor doesn't know that. He's told, oh, you've got to get these statin drugs. You've got to get the number down. And when I went to medical school, cholesterol was okay up to about 280, and then they got it down to 230. If you weren't over 230, you were perfectly all right. But you see, the drug companies couldn't sell enough of their product if they accepted 230 as normal. So they had to convince the doctors they had to get it down less than 200. And by doing that, they could sell literally tens of millions of dollars more in the way of products. And I believe it's a great scam. Because if you look at the scientific studies, you find out that they did not show a dramatic increase, especially in women, especially in older people, especially in children, and even very questionable. There are slight improvements in middle-aged men, I suppose, up to about 50. If you've had evidence of previous heart attack, why? But if you never had any incident of heart attack, why, it's not going to do any good. So if you've got a normal heart, why are they putting on this? Well, it's great for the bottom line, but not yours, theirs. We're going to be back in just a moment with Shane Ellison. And, of course, we're going to welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. He's got a great treatise. He's got all the scientific studies that most of your doctors have never read. Okay, Shane, go ahead, pick up the story.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Shane.
So, you know, looking back real quick, I think it's an important note to let people know about the difference between absolute and relative. And the relative is what's being used by drug companies. With Pravacol, they said that the relative risk reduction for total mortality was 21%, and the doctors fell for that. When you look at absolute, it was only 3.1%, and that's the best result that any statin drug has had. 3.1% when you include the placebo group. But if you discard the placebo group, you're showing much higher rates, say 21%, even 30%. And by discarding that data, the doctors have fallen for the myth that statin drugs prevent heart disease.
But there are a lot of doctors out there, I mean, a very responsible doctor who looked at this data and have written articles saying, this is a scam. And you even quote some of the doctors in essence say, this really isn't doing any good. I mean, everybody's getting on these drugs, and in many instances, they're doing far more harm than good. Would you like to get into some of those studies that suggest that this is really not something we should all be doing?
Well, we have the studies showing the cancer rates. We have the studies showing the loss of memory because of the myelin sheath breakdown. And we have the studies showing that it depletes CoQ10 within the heart. Many doctors now are advocating the use of CoQ10 along with a statin drug, but there's been no studies showing that by taking a statin drug and CoQ10 that you're going to increase or maintain levels of CoQ10 within the heart.
And I think this is simply just another example, exactly like the Vioxx, that they're more interested in the sales than they are in the health of the people. Now, the government now is really a pull off one of the greatest scams of all time. They've moved any lawsuits that can be brought against the drug companies from the state courts, where they should be able to bring these lawsuits, to the federal courts, where they can tie them up indefinitely with judges who will be very, very friendly to the drug companies and will ignore the terrible damage that's being done to the individual. I think we saw that recently with Terry Schiavo. So you have to understand that they want to tie this up in the courts so nothing can be done, as more and more people, I believe, are going to die as a result. They're not going to be saving lives, because actually, if you look at the absolute mortality rates, what is the absolute mortality rate on average, in the best group as far as the statin drugs? And I'm talking about the middle-aged male with severe heart attack. I mean, how many lives are we going to save?
It's a 3% increase in total mortality.
All right, now,
mortality.
If you're a normal person and you don't have any heart disease, how many lives are we going to save?
Zero.
Zero. And see if you don't have severe heart disease, well, it's not going to do any good. And yet they're putting everybody onto this. This is what's the most incredible thing. And the average doctor has never read these studies. Now, Shane has written a very fascinating book, Health Myths Exposed. How can people get copies of your book?
They can get that book at Amazon. They can get it at their local bookstore. My website is healthmyths.net, www.healthmyths.net. I'd like to capitalize on something you said previously, how they've, over time, they've slowly but surely lowered the so-called beneficial cholesterol level from 280 to 230 to 200. Today, the National Cholesterol Education Program dictates that within all human beings, total cholesterol should be at 200. What that means is that 105 million Americans have become patients, because 105 million Americans have cholesterol levels over 200.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening is Shane Ellison, his book Health Myths Exposed, and you can get that on Amazon.com, or you can go to his website. Health Myths, is that healthmythexposed.com or org or what?
Just healthmyth.net.
Healthmyth.net.
Yep, plural.
Okay, healthmyths.net. And of course, Shane is pointing out that by progressively lowering why the accepted level of cholesterol, why you're going to have over, 100 million people are going to need these drugs, the trouble is, who's funding these various committees? They're all funded by the drug companies. These are not impartial groups of doctors who just get together. This whole thing is a scam, the propaganda of the drug companies working in concert to get everybody onto these medications. Now, the background is basically this, that your major source of cholesterol does not come from the eggs you eat. The major source of cholesterol doesn't come from, you know, from butter or from dairy products. The major source of cholesterol is manufactured in your own body. And what they're going to do is poison your liver so that you'll have less cholesterol produced. That's what it's really all about. The question is, will you really live longer and healthier if you get your cholesterol down? And if you read the studies and you realize you're going to dramatically increase the incidence of cancer and memory loss and, of course, sexual dysfunction and CoQ10, you know, all of these things are side effects of this drug. And then you look at the potential benefits. The potential benefits are really very, very limited. And all the studies show it really doesn't do much good in women. It really doesn't do any good in elderly people. And I'm talking about people over, say, 55. I'm talking about men over 55 who do not necessarily have a history of heart attack. And even in younger men, unless they have a history of previous heart disease, you're not going to dramatically decrease current heart attack. In fact, it's not going to be dramatic at all. You're talking about 3%. So what they're really doing is getting it to change your whole lifestyle and put yourself in potential danger for a 3% if you already have serious heart disease. And I think that this is one of the greatest scams, right along with Vioxx and so many of the other things that they're doing, which are not intended to help the people, but I fear are designed to make large profits. And there may be another agenda, which, of course, we'll be addressing in my newsletter when we talk about Dr. David Graham's testimony before the Senate. That was largely, at least the most incriminating details, were blocked out by the media across America. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And our guest is Shane Ellison. Go ahead, Shane.
Are we taking calls?
No, we are. We're going to just wait and see if we can get some people to call in if they are really concerned and they want to know more about this. But I think this is really such a terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah, I would say that this is much bigger than Vioxx. There's far more people worldwide on statin drugs, cholesterol-lowering drugs, than were on Vioxx. And with the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs, you know, the danger is twofold. One is the direct result or the direct side effects from the drug, and then the direct side effects of lower cholesterol. Because you have cholesterol in every cell of the human body. It's the only molecule that's in every cell of the human body. It plays a huge role in longevity.
Does it make part of the membrane of the cells? Or where does it go into the cells?
It holds the fatty acids, which make up the membrane of the cells. It's akin to nails, which hold up wood, which hold up the house. And you could think of your body as being the home, and as you pull out the nails or you pull out the cholesterol, the house falls down. And I guarantee you that's what we're seeing happen with people who take cholesterol-lowering drugs.
Well, if you get this low enough, as low as they want you to, you're in real trouble. And I mean, the body, you know, is made to produce the cholesterol. You need the cholesterol. That makes it the building blocks of the body. And what they're doing is lowering this, and you say, well, they wouldn't do this. My doctor wouldn't prescribe this. It was going to be harmful. And the fact is, your doctor doesn't know it's harmful. He's never read the scientific studies. I've read scientific studies coming right out of Harvard. And, the doctors back there, some of them are very, very concerned. Now, others are on the payroll or they're getting grants from the drug companies, and they're not going to speak out. Because if you're in academic medicine, and, of course, you don't get grants from the drug companies or from the government, why, you can't do research. If you can't do research, you can't write papers. You can't write papers. Why, your career is over. It's the old idea of publish or perish. And unfortunately, what we've done is we've made our scientists simply prostitutes for the drug companies. And this is the reality of where we are today. And the great tragedy is an awful lot of Americans are going to die because of it. And then there is another agenda. After all, many people will tell you they're just too many people around. We'll be back in just a moment. Here with Shane Ellison, my telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. Maybe you don't believe it, maybe you'd like this documentation. Well, give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Shane Ellison, his book, Health Myths Exposed. That's Health Myths Exposed. And I've read, of course, what you sent me. Was that coming out of your book, Shane? Or
what I sent you was a free ebook that I offer online. That free ebook is available at www.health-fx.net. That's F as in Frank, X as in X-ray. And I figure with the masses using statin drugs, then they might as well be informed on the reality behind those drugs, because when I was a chemist working, making drugs for Eli Lilly, I found that most doctors and the public were completely and totally misinformed. It was only the chemists who were designing the drugs who were aware of the biological effects of these foreign substances into the body.
How long did you work for Eli Lilly?
After graduate school, I worked for Eli Lilly for a year and a half.
Okay, fine. So why did you leave them? Wasn't that a pretty good job?
No, it wasn't, because we were in charge of designing tamoxifen derivatives. The drug company, Eli Lilly, found out that tamoxifen was increasing cancer rates among women. And so our job was to design a tamoxifen derivative that's still bound to the estrogen receptor and blocked estrogen, but hopefully would not cause cancer like tamoxifen was, and we were unsuccessful in our attempts in doing that, and the project was canceled. We moved on, and I noticed that Eli Lilly was advertising tamoxifen as an anti-cancer drug, which was the antithesis of what we had found in the lab.
In other words, they knew very well it was going to produce cancer, and they were continuing to market. Is it still on the market?
Yes, it's still on the market.
Yeah, and they know it produces cancer, right?
Yeah, that was the catalyst for me investigating in health myths, and eventually the sum result was me resigning from Eli Lilly.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ed, who's calling from New York, and the lines are lighting up now. Maybe when we get through with Ed here, while our line will be open, all the lines are taken right now. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I'm interested in this particular subject because
right.
I went through quite a deal trying to analyze whether I should take a statin drug or not. I had a bypass surgery as a result of the balloon plasty going awry.
How old a man are you, Ed?
I'm 76 now.
Okay, fine. Go ahead. So you had an angioplasty. It went awry. Did you have to have the coronary bypass?
Yes, I had a triple bypass as a result.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Shane Ellison. Right now we have Ed calling us from New York, and Ed is in 76, and he is, of course, had a coronary bypass operation, and then, of course, the subject comes up, will he benefit from the statin drug? So what did you decide, Ed?
Well, after having taken statin drugs for a while, I guess a couple of years, I decided that I wasn't feeling that great. Seemed like I was tired all the time.
Right, because the CoQ10 cuts out.
Yeah, well, as a result, I decided to take myself off from the statin drugs.
What happened when you did?
I felt somewhat better, but I started studying into it and found out that the CoQ10 was necessary. I found from an advertiser that was selling nutritional supplements. And so I found that once I started taking CoQ10, I started to get feeling better.
Okay, and are you doing pretty well now?
I feel much better, yes.
Okay, fine.
I started taking the Longevinex about 3 months ago, and I had a blood test, and I had physical a couple weeks ago, and the report from the drug from the blood test was that my cholesterol was at about a total of 148.
Well, my goodness, you're going to have to start eating a lot more eggs. Okay, fine. Well, Shane, did you have any thoughts at all as far as the story that Ed's telling us?
Well, with all the research I've done, you know, I'm a real big advocate of cholesterol. The longer we live, the higher the cholesterol goes, the higher the cholesterol, the greater chance of us living longer.
And I think that's really such an important thing, Ed. You and I are getting older. We need a higher cholesterol level.
Oh.
And the idea that you're going to knock this down so you're going to live longer, I think, is really very, very dangerous. Well, Shane, what about the incidence of people who had, obviously, have arteriosclerosis? When you get to be 76, does lowering the cholesterol do anything at all to prevent another heart attack?
No, there's no correlation between preventing heart attack and lowering cholesterol, none whatsoever. And, you know, there's a lot of advocates out there with natural supplements that will lower cholesterol just as good as statin drugs. But, again, cholesterol is vital to the human body. You don't want to lower it, whether by drug-induced lowering cholesterol or supplement-induced lowering cholesterol.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Ed?
Yes, I did ask. For the first time, I found out that homocysteine was a critical factor,
right.
And the doctor never requested that I have my homocysteine level checked, and so I requested that and found out that my homocysteine was something like 12.6.
Is that good or bad?
Well, that's supposed to be, as I understand, between 6 and 12. And
yeah, that's correct.
So he gave me a prescription for a B-complex to get the homocysteine down, but I couldn't understand why these people never asked for the homocysteine.
Because what you do is you get tunnel vision. I know because I practiced medicine for so many years, not cardiology, but there's certain things you think about. And you're told over and over and over again, it's all cholesterol, and it really isn't. Half of them have to do with inflammation. A significant number have to do with homocysteine. And there's a real serious question how significant the cholesterol really is in the arteriosclerosis and the heart attacks. So, anyway, you're going to have to get your doctor educated there. And, you know, put together a great 14.
He wants me to get my total cholesterol down to under 100.
Don't you dare do it. what you need to do is get the... Why don't you get health myths exposed?
That would be, you know, going below 100, even going near... Even at 140, you know, you're talking about suicide in slow motion.
Right. really. But he's a victim. He's a victim of the propaganda from the drug companies. And you need to get the information. Why don't you get the book? And I'll tell you what, it's really fascinating, just what I've read already of Shane's material. And we have the same material from Bill Sardi, from Dr. Blaylock. And we need to get this information out. We need to get you to educate your doctor.
I'm sure
he's interested in doing the best thing for you, and he's hurting a lot of patients because he just doesn't know.
Well, I'm trying to educate some other people that are on the statin drugs.
All right, fine. Well, you can listen to our program, Ed. God bless you. Thanks. What part of New York are you in? Is it the upper end, Albany?
It's actually west of Albany, about 80 miles.
All right. Well, God bless. And thanks so much.
Good luck to you, Ed.
Bye. Let's go to David calling from, is this Corona, California?
Corona, California.
Fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a question. Before I ask my question, you guys are talking about eggs. Isn't the cholesterol in the eggs actually the good cholesterol?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't been able to distinguish between good and bad cholesterol. I don't adhere to, you know, the rhetoric of good and bad cholesterol. I'm a firm believer in that the pharmaceutical companies have simply mislabeled LDL cholesterol as bad simply because it's a component of many different components of plaque within the arterial wall. So I don't adhere to the bad or good cholesterol. Within eggs, yes, we do have plenty of cholesterol. But the main source of cholesterol is from the liver. And if you consume eggs, then it just down, the liver just down regulates the production of cholesterol.
And that's, see, the doctor can tell you that. Ordinarily, your liver wants to produce the cholesterol because they need that. You need that for your brain cell. You need that for your cellular function. And what they're doing is poisoning your liver.
Yes, and if you don't eat it from, if you don't eat cholesterol from diet, then what happens? The liver starts producing a lot more cholesterol because it's so essential. Without it, we would die.
And of course, if you eat a lot of cholesterol, then the liver downsizes and doesn't produce so much. You know, the Lord gave us an amazing mechanism. If we just don't interfere with it, and what we're doing is interfering with it, and going to get into all sorts of problems.
Okay. Also, that leads me to this. I notice, like some of the HMO doctors, like some of my doctors, they don't really recommend doing the high homocysteine test. They just mainly concentrate on the cholesterol. Didn't they ever read about the studies by Dr. McCauley from Harvard University?
No, probably they never did, and so you're going to have to get them educated. You're going to have to get copies of those things. There's so much that they really don't know. They go to their meetings, and the meetings, so many of them are funded by the drug companies, and the magazines they read are funded by the drug companies, and their medical organizations are subsidized by the drug companies, and they really don't get the information. This is why I want you to get educated, and you get to them, and you educate them, so they can take better care of their patients, because they really like to. But they don't know about cysteine. They don't know that half of the heart attacks have nothing to do with fat at all.
Yeah, and I think even with this stuff, it's even written in the Journal of American Medical Association, or was it the Journal of New England Journal of Medical Association, one of those, that even talked about the B6 and B12 folic acid that can actually lower the high homocysteine level.
What about, Shane, you're probably better on that than I am. Do you know?
Yeah, it's well documented in New England Journal of Medicine, Journal of American Medicine, B12 folic acid lowers homocysteine levels, but the American Heart Association is not adhering to that, and the doctors are getting their orders from the American Heart Association, and the American Heart Association is getting their orders from the NECP, National Education and Cholesterol Program, and that's completely funded by the drug industry.
So I wonder why they're just not telling the doctors about homocysteine. Maybe there's not much money in it.
B12 folic acid, you know, you're looking at $5, $10, $15 a month.
Right.
Okay. Anything else, David?
Well, it just seems like they're all on the same gang, a conspiracy. you know, it's the pharmaceutical companies and biting into their profits.
And the FDA and the NIH and the CDC, they're all in this thing together. Now, there are good people working at the FDA, like Dr. David Graham. And they've crucified him. And because of what happened to him, the rest of the good people there are afraid to speak out. So we're going to have to just do an end run around these people, these wicked people, and get the public educated, and then, of course, help the people like David Graham, who had the courage to speak out. He ruined his career after 20 years. They're after him. They're going to destroy him. Oh, he's one of the most courageous men in America today, and he will save hundreds of thousands of lives because of what he's done.
Yes,
he seems to be doing God's work, and that's the more important work than what some of these other guys are doing. And these other people, I guess, are going to be judged for not spreading the good that they should be spreading.
Amen to that. Well, your job is to get the information, get the scientific facts, and we'll try to provide them for you, because we'll be putting together 4 tape sets, but Shane has got together a lot of great information, and you can get the source material. You can go to your local medical library, because there'll be one in every large hospital, and they can get these studies for you.
Yes, everything's well documented in the book for doctors, professionals who want to go seek that information out for themselves.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, David.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Tom calling from Ohio. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And is this Tom calling from Ohio?
Yes, Dr. Stan, I wanted to talk to you about, I had to go to the hospital last weekend, and I don't usually go to hospitals, but they said I had a 6-millimeter kidney stone, and the pain was unbelievable, and they said they took an x-ray of it. I never saw the x-ray, they wouldn't discuss it with me. They just told me it was 6-millimeter kidney stone, and it probably had broken up, and I never noticed it, but on one of the IV bags hanging on that deal over the little pump, there was a bag of Cipro. they were giving me Cipro, and I didn't even know it.
Well, of course, were they worried about urinary tract infection, or were they going to, of course, give you one of these ultrasound treatments to try to break up that kidney stone, or what were they going to do?
Well, they couldn't. The specialist was out of town for the group because of the holiday, Easter holiday, and they couldn't get anybody. I don't know if the Cipro is, do you think it'll be any harm to me?
Well, the thing is, Cipro is a very good antibiotic. The problem is that it does attack the collagen, and so it weakens your Achilles tendon or your supraspinatus tendon. So just don't be doing any playing any tennis or anything. You're going to put a stress on those tendons for about 6 weeks, and after you've finished the Cipro, after about 6 weeks, by the tendons tend to regain their strength. So that is the major disadvantage of the Cipro. I'm sure they must have found some pus or something in your urine to justify giving you that.
I see. That tape that you offered for the doctors to listen to, how much is that tape on the drug?
Well, basically, of course, we need to put together a four-tape set on statins. I haven't done it yet. We have all the four-tape sets. It's just a matter of getting around to doing it. I laid out, I think, three or four new four-tape sets just last night for my son to put together. Well, we will put together a four-tape set on the statin drugs with the interviews with Shane and with Bill Sardi and with Dr. Blaylock, and we'll have this available probably in about 4 weeks. But right now we're in the process of putting together. I've got to give four talks here the first of next month, so I've got to get those done before I do anything else.
Well, that was a situation that Dr. Graham, or David Graham, was in. Was he a doctor?
Yes, he was a doctor. He was had his master's in public health.
What did they do to him?
Well, he was the assistant a director of drug safety at the FDA, and they pulled him out of that, and I suppose they probably got him someplace classifying the congressional record or something. They are not going to let him do anything at all. They're going to take him out of being effective and his scientist, and they'll hound him until he either quits or retires. That's the standard method that they use when somebody has, of course, exposed the close relationship between the high officials in the FDA and the people who run the pharmaceutical company, because the government officials, then when they retire, they go to work for the FDA or for a public relations firm they go to work for the pharmaceutical industry or a public relations concern that is employed by the pharmaceutical industry, and they get a lot of money, and they simply sold their souls.
Will you be at your tape 800 number tomorrow where you sell the books and tapes? Will you be able to be reached in the morning?
Yes, you can reach me. I'll be around.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Thanks so much. And, of course, I think we just need to get this information out. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Shane Ellison, and he's written a great book on health myths exposed. So you want to talk about any of the other health myths?
Yes, many of the health myths I speak about in my book revolve around the drugs that are currently on the market that have not been pulled and kind of lay low underneath the radar off the screen of most doctors who are still prescribing them. We also talk about myth number 9 is that the cure to obesity is simply dieting. And we discuss why that's false and the true factor in obesity.
Well, what is the true factor in obesity?
Well, the number one, and it's interesting because it also ties into the prevention of heart disease. And the number one factor to obesity, the biggest risk, is sugar intake in the form of sucrose, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, things of that nature. And with obesity, it just ignites insulin from the pancreas, and it blocks what's known as thermogenesis. And thermogenesis is basically our right to be thin, our God-given right to be thin. But when we're consuming these foods that have been laden with sugar, we block out thermogenesis, and the body can no longer burn fat. Instead, it burns carbohydrates. And by not burning fat, we store it. And with respect to heart disease, that sugar constantly being in the bloodstream, it becomes what's known as oxidized, and it simply becomes the molecular structure of glucose changes, and that change is called an advanced glycated end product, or simply an age product. and like a knife carving into clay, that age product, in addition to enhancing obesity, will scar the arterial wall like a knife in clay and build plaque, because plaque is nature's band-aid. And over time, that plaque buildup due to sugar or age products results in a heart attack or stroke.
Okay, well, let's go to Joan, who's calling from Wayne County. I guess that's Michigan. Hi, Joan. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Steen. How are you tonight?
Doing fine. How are you?
Great. I have a question to ask you. I take psychotropic drugs. You know what those are, don't you?
You take psychotropic drugs.
Prozac
or Zoloft or Luvox?
No, I don't take any antidepressants.
What are you taking then?
I take Depakote and Klonopin.
Okay.
And I want to ask you about Depakote because I know it can cause liver damage.
All right. Does that
and I just had a blood test a month ago.
All right.
And it came out good, normal.
All right. Well, we'll ask Shane because that's maybe more of his field than mine.
But I have been taking it for about 8 years.
All right, Shane, do you know anything at all about the
medicine
she's talking about?
Yeah, there is significant liver damage associated with it. Also, insulin resistance is a major side effect of psychotropics. Most people who are on those drugs are overweight.
I have a definite weight problem.
Hold that, just a moment. Well, our guest is Shane Ellison, and of course, we're talking about his book, Health Myths Exposed. And Joan was calling in from Wayne County, Michigan. She's on the psychotropic drugs. Shane was saying that they do produce problems as far as obesity is concerned. What are some of the other problems, Shane?
The obesity, the biggest thing is it causes insulin resistance being first and then eventually diabetes. Most people who are taking the psychotropics as well as the antidepressants are overweight as a result. There's no dieting, there's no fat loss supplement, there's no fat loss drug that's going to help that. In addition to that, they are foreign substances to the body, so the liver has to process these drugs. And as time goes on, the liver breaks down and can no longer function. Most people rationalize that because they're getting their liver tested, they're going to be okay. But once the liver's damaged, it's going to be very hard to repair it. It's not as if, oh, you go in and, oh, your liver's damaged, well, let's get you a new one. It doesn't happen like that.
All right, fine. So.
Oh my God, this sounds horrible.
Well, anyway,
I figured it was something like that. I figured they weren't telling me all the facts.
Are you depressed, or why are you taking?
Oh, I'm not depressed. No.
Why are you taking the medications?
Well, the doctor gave it to me for mood swings.
Okay, so you did have.
It was an anti-seizure medication. I know that much.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you're just going to have to get a good doctor that you trust, that you can work with, and without actually having somebody who can actually go over you. It's pretty hard to say, but all these medications do have side effects.
Well, I can't take any other medication because every one of them makes me sick.
Right. Well, Shane, do you have any suggestions at all for Joan?
I don't, there's a lot of lifestyle factors.
Over the years, I didn't even think I was mentally ill, but they gave me all these different medications.
Okay.
And every one of them made me sick. They gave me antidepressants, you name it. Whatever they gave me made me sick. Lithium, everything.
Well, sometimes, a real good diet can change it. Have you ever gotten any of Dr. Lorraine Day's material? She has a video called Turn on the Lights, which talks about the mental depression that many people have. That she's been able to help simply with diet. But, hey, we're out of time. If you'd like to know more about that, you're welcome to call me off the air, okay?
Okay, now dial the same number.
Yeah, well, no, you dial the 1-800-544-8927 sometime tomorrow. But God bless you, Joan.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Shane, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
I sure do. It's important. I think you've been promoting this throughout the show is that we have to take our health into our own hands, and if we are going to visit our doctors, we need to take an active role in educating our doctors so we can work one-on-one with our doctors and make informed decisions and not blindly, instead of blindly taking doctors' orders. Plenty of ways to do that. Health Myths Exposed, my free ebook at health-fx.net. Superb.
Now just do that website one more time.
Yep, www.health-fx.net is the free ebook, and my website is healthmyths.net.
God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, Shane. We'll have to get you on again sometime real soon. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Okay, well, I guess this evening has been Shane Ellison, his book, Health Myths Exposed, and fascinating material that I think that everybody needs to know, especially this thing about the COX-2 inhibitors, the statin drugs, and so many other things out there. And sometimes the more medicines we take, the more problems we have. So there are certain things that medicines are wonderful for. Antibiotics are tremendous when properly used, and certainly the cardiac medications are great, but so many of the things that we're taking, that we have statin drugs, and these are multi-billion dollar products, and of course they're doing multi-billion dollar damage. So certainly if you'd like to get the one excellent book we carry, it's called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. I've written by Dr. Blaylock. We carry Dr. Blaylock's second book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, going into the background of the effect of NutraSweet, that's aspartame and MSG, on our health, in case these are excitotoxins. They actually do damage to the brain, and of course they produce, in many instances, permanent lesions in the brain that lead to a permanent obesity, or morbid obesity, and nothing you're going to do is going to stop that. It happens in animals, it helps in humans, and that's the last thing they want the public to know about. Well, there's so much more to the story, we don't have time to talk about it. Let me suggest our video, None Dare Call It Genocide. That's None Dare Call It Genocide. You'll learn a lot about the things we're talking about. We have an excellent video that of talk Bill Sardi gave at our seminar last fall. That's Bill Sardi's seminar video, which we do carry, and then my talk, None Dare Call It Genocide. And then, of course, you would like to get some of the other material we have. We have four tape sets on fluoride. We actually have two four-tape sets on fluoride. We have a four-tape set on mercury. We have a four-tape set on aspartame. If you'd like a free copy of our catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we could certainly suggest that we'll get you a copy of one of our newsletters, perhaps our November newsletter goes into the background of how they're poisoning our children and our children's minds with fluoride and drinking water all across America. 67% of our communities have fluoridated water, and 90% of those they add hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is about 50% fluoride, and then the rest is lead and arsenic and cadmium and polonium-20. Why are they putting it there? Why? Because it's too expensive. They're putting the toxic waste substance. It is so so caustic and so expensive. And so they come up with a wonderful solution. They're going to put it in the drinking water. And they know, according to EPA standards, that it'll increase the incidence of cancer. One in 1,000 people will get cancer because of what they're doing. And they don't care. And you're not hearing about it. Your doctor doesn't know this. And your dentist doesn't know that. They don't want to hurt you. But you're going to have to get the facts. You're going to have to get the documentation. And you're going to have to help us educate them about what's really going on behind the scenes. And understand that behind all of this is organized evil. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. The book, the video, the audio tape, or get all three of them together, the Brotherhood of Darkness special. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle, you know, 7 days a week. So until tomorrow evening, we'll be with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.